Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 87 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to cover this week's nerd news. We're going to begin with a new straight-to-streaming movie, the movie Irresistible, and then we're going to discuss the latest in movie release pushbacks with Mulan and Tenet, and then some streaming news. Then we'll move over into tech and talk about a new coding app for Amazon Web Services, the Data Dividend Project, and the future of electric vehicles. There's lots to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, and welcome back to episode 87 of the Nerd Cantina Show. The world keeps spinning. COVID cases keep going up. The world has to respond. I spent 6 of the last 7 days with almost no cell phone reception out in the middle of the San Bernardino National Forest, and it was glorious.
Yeah, did you wear a mask in the middle of the forest?
I did not. I had no need to. I barely saw other human beings. It was a good
social
isolated time.
Vacation.
Yes, it was definitely social distanced. That's how you, I guess, vacation nowadays in an RV, being self-contained in the middle of the forest.
Yeah, you're living that Walking Dead life, man, just cruising in an RV, staying away from everybody.
Oh, yeah, that's rehearsal for when the COVID vaccine turns everybody into zombies and I go take the RV out to the middle of
Head
the mountains.
For high ground.
Yeah, absolutely. The World War Z style, which I wasn't a big fan of the movie, but...
It's 2020. It would not shock me at this point.
No. But I'm just saying, if for anybody who hasn't read World War Z, but specifically if you haven't listened to World War Z, it's a phenomenal audiobook, like what a top-notch audiobook that I suggest people to go find. So because Max Brooks, Mel Brooks' son, like he got a Hollywood cast. It was a full-voiced, full-casted audiobook with a lot of people that like John Turturro reading individuals' journal entries, because that's essentially what the whole book is journal entries. It's not like the movie. You should do it. Audiobook.
Yeah, wouldn't there sound effects and things in there too?
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I want to say I listened to the audiobook as well.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal audiobook because the book was drastically different than the movie. It was told in more of a historical journaling fashion, talking about people's experiences, not like the movie where they're following Brad Pitt in real time through the event. So each person who was talking about their story in the interviews process or the journaling process was voiced by a Hollywood actor. And like you could tell their voice and they did great.
No, I remember it being really good.
All right, back on track.
I spent my quarantine weekend golfing once again, which was phenomenal. And I checked out that movie, Jon Stewart's first writer and director movie, that Irresistible with Steve Carell. Not bad. Like, not bad. You know, it's a... political comedy, has a fun premise and pokes fun at the kind of way we campaign and campaign finance and just how the whole voting process actually is. And takes you on a little bit of a ride. I don't want to give anything away in the movie, but it's really good. Rose Byrne and Chris Cooper are really good in it. Chris Cooper just plays a perpetual farmer, I think, from here on out in his career. This is now, like, I think the third thing in a row I've seen him, and he's just got, like, a Carhartt jacket, a flannel, and he's just the good old boy farmer. It's definitely worth a watch if you're sitting at home wondering if you should pay the $20 to have a movie theater experience at your house. It's a good one. I'm not gonna argue with you if you want to spend the dub.
Yeah, I mean, I'll wait 2 or 3 months and see which streaming service it lands on.
Yeah, that $20 ticket, it's hard to pull the trigger on because, one, it's more than a movie ticket, and two, I'm at my house. Like, I had to supply the TV. I had to supply the power.
I'm already paying for the internet.
Like, yeah, I'm the one forking the bill for this whole setup here, and you're still charging me a $20 bill to watch this movie in my house. I don't know, something don't feel right about that. Yeah,
and even if me and my wife are watching it together, I mean, this is more than me and my wife spend on a movie because we're 11 a.m. matinee goers, bring our own snacks in our pockets kind of people. We don't even spend $20 for the two of us to go see a movie.
I I feel bad for like the people, because at least I still have like, you know, I have a 65 inch 4K TV, you know, so I get like a decent experience with home viewing. But like, there's people out there still with like 32 inch boob tubes. Like what are they paying 20 for? You know what I mean? Like, I don't even have that good a surround. I got the sound bar, but I don't have surround sound. You know, you're charging me movie experience, theater experience prices, but depending on your financial situation at home, you're not getting movie theater experiences. That's for goddamn sure.
Yeah. I mean, they're just assuming that you're inviting your neighbors over and everybody else over, and there's more than one person watching it.
Yeah, because that's what I want. I want every asshole I know trash in my house to watch fucking Irresistible. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. This ain't the Tyson fight, motherfucker. we got to charge pay-per-view prices now just in case somebody has a gang of people over. Like, no, you want to bypass the movie theaters, you eat that one. You just fucking eat it, pal. If I have 10 people here, you eat that.
All right, but long story short, I guess it's... If you're looking for something to watch, worth $20.
It was worth your time. Maybe. I don't know how long it's going to come out. Wait, but it's definitely worth watching, especially since we have an election coming up in 3 months. It really shines a few lights on things.
Well, I guess while we're talking about movies and these premium video on demand movies that skip the theater, we could talk about the ones that didn't want to skip the theater. They still probably never will skip the theater. And what we see is another pushback. So last week we just talked about Mulan was supposed to come out in mid-July. End of July was supposed to be Christopher Nolan's Tenet. And we were talking about that. I couldn't see Mulan actually happening. We thought maybe Tenet would hold as the first release, but Mulan was too close. And then in the last 7 days, we find out that both were too close. both of them have been pushed back again. I think that this is going to continue to roll back. It's hard to see where we're going to turn around when you look at like the numbers of, you know, new cases and all this COVID stuff. It's just, if we keep sliding based off of, you know, the information we have now and the number of cases we have now, there's no indication to think that it's going to come down anytime soon.
Isn't this like a kind of, it's not going down because people don't give a shit.
Like, no, they don't. They
so
don't.
If they're just not going to give a shit, why do we close the theater? Like, just let them not give a shit. Like,
yeah, it's such a difficult position to be in. I really don't envy policymakers that have to make these decisions. There is no clear-cut way. There really isn't. You know, there's the right thing to do for the economy, which is just fuck it. Just let everybody go party. Let everybody go to the movies. Let everybody just live their lives, and we'll come out the other side with less people, but we'll be all right. And then there's the public health people that like, fuck the economy, shut everything down. We need to preserve every life. Every life is a statistic that matters. Somewhere in the middle, man, these policymakers have to make these impossible decisions on which part of that sliding scale you have to decide. And the longer this drags on, I don't know, it's just so difficult for people to make the decision again. Like 2 months ago, you decided to close theaters because we were having 8,000 cases a day. Now we got 40,000 new cases a day. And you're supposed to say you're still going
to
open theaters next week?
Well,
how do you do it?
Too, it's at the point where we've been at this like 4 months. Like, you know the routine, folks. You know the routine. If you want to keep your risk low, wear the mask, stay in the house, practice social distancing, don't go out. People that ain't afraid of it, they're walking around. Majority of people I still see wearing masks. Like, I don't think as many people are fighting the mask thing.
Truth is you're in one of the only major metropolitan areas that has been on a downward trend, right? Like Illinois and Chicago specifically is one of the only areas that is not, now that we're seeing this resurgent, Chicago's one of the only ones that's holding strong as like, hey, we won. We did all right. Like, I'm in Southern California, and 2 days ago, 7 counties got shut down. Yesterday, 8 counties were threatened by the government to like, hey, you make good decisions or I'm going to shut you down, which was pretty much telling the county officials to close it themselves before the governor puts down the, you know, his hammer.
But California put out that mandatory masks and everywhere, like, period, everywhere.
Yeah. Yep. Like, fact. And I mean, it's still, I don't know. Like I said, I don't envy the positions of a politician having to make these decisions.
Well, even,
because if you're going to make decisions for the economy now,
it's you know, Christopher Nolan is just like stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah,
he keeps pushing it back just 2 weeks, which I commend him. He's like, no, we're going to watch this fucking movie, guys. Like, we are watching this fucking movie. I wouldn't doubt if this motherfucker buys out like theaters and lets people go see it for free. He just wants people to see this movie bad.
I do respect that, because just about everybody else, you know, they did their movie pushbacks early, where they tried to time it with like, okay, well, we got, you know, some movie planned out coming out this month. We're going to slide it in between these, or we're going to put it closer to Christmas, and we're going to try to optimize, you know, that movie viewing window. Tenet is just saying like, we're just going to be the first ones, period. I don't care when it is. We're just going to keep rolling back 1 week, whether it's in the middle of September. I don't care. Right now we're looking at August. Great. But in the end, they just want a release. They just want a theatrical release, which is commendable, because everybody else is definitely trying to slide and push everything back. And then eventually, you know, if movies are open in November, December through March timeframe, that's going to be an ugly slate of movies competing against each other.
Yeah. It's going to be this winter, if things get back to some normalcy, should be pretty crazy. You know, Marvel's got a couple in the chamber. Disney's got some, like, yeah, Universal. Everyone's just holding on to these movies. 2021 is going to be rough. But then also you got to think about the amount of, like, the length of this shutdown. Nobody's filming anything.
I was going to say, yeah, production's been on hold too. So
we're going to have a TV and film drought like crazy.
I think TV is going to be the weird drought. We already have the kind of the film drought right now, right? And we're just dealing with it. And eventually film's going to come back. But we have no TV drought yet. But soon, we're just going to run out of everything that's
I know, that's what produced. Everyone's like relying on these streaming services, and they're just like pumping out content, and everyone's just like, oh yeah, it's not missing a beat. I'm just binge watching this. I'm binge watch that. You're going to binge yourself into like this just desert of nothing to like literally nothing to watch. You know, because nobody's filming, nobody's.
How sad is our existence if we actually have nothing to watch? Like, I mean, there's when you look at like
you're going to see a bunch of like 22-year-olds watching Cheers, wishing they could go out drinking. Fucking just what? Look, MDing Norm. I want a corner stool.
In the end, another article coming out when we talk about these streaming services and things that are merging to help them is Amazon Prime just announced a watch party feature. So for whatever's left in the streaming world for you to watch, you can join and send invites to individuals to watch it in live time. I was just talking to my wife. She wanted to do some level of watch party with her sister, who's trapped in Texas by herself and is like taking the isolation very aggressively. And so she has had zero social interactions with human beings. She's just hanging out with her dog for the last 4 months. And there really wasn't a good option. And then today we see the article about Amazon Prime having the watch party. I know we talked a couple weeks ago about somebody else. I don't remember which streaming service.
There was an outside app you could use for Netflix.
Yeah, but not native within Netflix. So it's still kind of difficult to navigate and work through. Amazon is trying to just build it and integrate it within its normal apps and everything else, and creating watch parties.
Like, this is still, who watches their television on a desktop? Like, that's what I'm saying. You want to be able to do it in your living room with your family, with like another family. Like, you want to be able, like, who's on their laptop watching all this shit? Like, I have a big, nice computer monitor. I'm not going to sit at my computer desk to watch a fucking TV show with you. Fuck you. Call me. Like, FaceTime. Like, I'm trying to sit on my lazy boy and watch this shit on my big ass TV.
Yeah, I didn't think this was going to be limited to the desktop. I thought they were going to build this natively into like their Fire Sticks and whatever apps that they had going.
I'm sure that's probably eventually the goal, but as of right now, it's just the desktop. But
I mean, I agree. I think this is a gaffler. I mean, truth is I don't know. I don't even talk to my wife when I'm watching a show with her on the couch together. I'm not that starved to have a conversation with somebody while I'm watching
where
things.
It's just fucking dead silence from 8 to 10 o'clock with a TV show going on.
Yeah. Although there are certain things. I will say, when I finally broke down and watched Tiger King, there were plenty of like pause moments. We're like, really? is this real life? So I guess there's some things, but for the most part, I don't know. I don't care for conversation with people.
Not if it's a really good show. I'm trying to watch this shit. Don't talk to me. I miss what they said. Shut the fuck up.
If you are one of those people who are starved for human interaction, check out Amazon Prime watch parties. You can go ahead and do that, I guess, from the desktop, hopefully soon through the native apps or whatever else it happens to be on smart TVs. And
now you can import your friend that always asks, who's that? What's where are they going? Now you can connect with that friend that never knows what the fuck is going on while you're watching the same goddamn show.
Or you could just go ahead and work out the bugs on this, so that way come September 4th, you're ready for some collective viewing of The Boys as we get the teasers coming out for The Boys season 2, and the premiere date has been set for September 4th coming out of for The Boys.
Yeah, it's not too far away. It's not too far.
Yeah, no, that's not. I mean, we expected it to come in the fall, so at least it's on the earlier side of the fall time frame, and that's just a show that I'm super looking forward to. They did such a great job in that first season.
Season 1 is always like the roughest of the seasons for even all the great shows. You know, you go back and some of your favorite shows, you watch season 1, you see how rough it kind of was getting characters developed and finding their writing and acting. Season 2's where, you know, 2, 3, 4 are where shows really break out. So I'm hoping they carry that torch even further. Make my number one worth, my issue number one worth a nice pretty penny.
Yeah, that's all you tend to care about here is your graded The Boys comics.
Yeah, I bought it with that intention 16 years ago. I Nerdstradamus the fuck out of that thing. 16 years it sat on a shelf in Mylar, kept it fucking mint.
You've got an Umbrella Academy as well, right?
Umbrella Academy comes out, yeah, July 31st. That's the newest one. So that'll be the next like big nerd cult kind of like show that I think hits. I don't think anything else is really slated to release before then.
No, and I thought season 1 did a good job in Umbrella Academy. I thought it was a solid first season show, and I'm curious on where it goes from here. I don't know anything about really the comic itself or the story that's told in the graphic novels there. So July 31st is going to be the next thing in probably the nerd world to get into.
Yeah, and I think Netflix releases all of them at once, so that's a thing that you can just binge, pound out all 8 and get through it, as some people love to do.
And then I guess the last thing to maybe go ahead and binge or knock out is if you were one of the people who paid for Quibi, you might want to just binge through those 8-minute episodes or whatever the hell Quibi was and quickly get through that. As what we see is
Quibi's going bye-bye.
Yeah, back, you know, Quibi came out in April, and we were talking about when Quibi was coming out, and we had to have like a whole section about what the hell is Quibi, not even having an understanding of what it was. And I really think that was a big part of the problem for what Quibi was, is they all they had was like cute little commercials or whatever else, but they never explained what the purpose was. They never really talked about or highlighted the individual shows, the individual things that were going to be on Quibi. And the truth is if you couldn't, during COVID-19, find an audience in the streaming world, like there's no better proof of the fact that this is not something that people want.
Yeah, and I love reading the article too about how it was like just really poorly managed. I want to say that, you know, it was worth about $1.7 billion. They raised like, billions of dollars to run this thing and signed all kinds of celebrities to do little shows and whatnot. And I'm guessing they didn't get paid as much as Reese Witherspoon, because I guess she got paid $6 million to do voiceover work for some like 7-minute National Geographic type show.
Yeah.
And it was her husband who was the casting director for Quibi. So everyone was just like, oh, hell no. And they're just like, what? What? She's famous, right? Like, she could do it.
Everybody knows
it's
her
like,
voice.
You know, they Jared Kushnered the Reese Witherspoon in there. Yeah, I thought that was funny. So it seemed like it was just kind of like doomed from the start. Just weird concept, bad marketing, throwing money into the wind.
They almost got you with that Reno 911 show.
Man, almost. If YouTube couldn't get me with a Karate Kid TV show, I don't know if Quibi was going to get me with Reno 911.
But we got you, YouTube. None of us paid for your subscription. And here it comes to Netflix.
Coming to Netflix, I'm glad.
Come over to Netflix.
Smart play by me. That was a very smart play by me.
Because they're on what? Going into season three? And now they're dumping everything.
But you know what's going to be really shitty is if like they didn't get the rights to season one and two.
All you get is like a previously on 5 minutes.
they just start with season three. And if you want to see season one and two, YouTube's like, still got you, fuckers. come give us your $5 so you could get the prequel.
I hope you're just being a bit facetious there. I was really counting on season one and two to come on because it was one of the shows I binged next.
If I was YouTube, I'd try to work that dick move into the contract for all you fuckers.
Definitely binging that. That is a show. This is the only thing that was on YouTube TV that was worth watching. And
maybe they'll bring Reno to Netflix now too.
Maybe in your little 8-minute segments.
That show was great. I don't care. I love that show.
I think that's it
for entertainment, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's all we got for entertainment side of the house. And I guess we can roll over into a couple tech topics. And you know, one of the first ones that came across, not a ton of news towards it, but it's just an interesting concept. So Amazon Web Services is launching a new app, a new way to code, and it's the no coding way of coding for a mobile web app builder that they're allowing people in. It's almost kind of like the way I look at it is it's kind of like the way you teach kids to code, that they got these blocky systems of where you just kind of drag and drop like plug-in buttons.
It's like the Squarespace for phone apps now. Like they had to do it with websites so that every asshole like me can create their own website. So yeah. It's kind of like the WordPress or the Squarespace of phone apps.
But it makes complete sense. I think it's a great concept that what they're putting together here, because the whole goal of it is to have the local entrepreneurs, the random people who want to build an app that supports their business or build an app that helps them, whether it's internally to help them with their processes within their business or externally towards like customer facing, but just to have simple ways of building intelligently designed apps without all that pesky learning Java or Python or whatever coding language that you probably don't need to for basic functionality.
Hey man, Nerd Cantina app coming.
Let's do it. I don't know what it's going to do for you, but just download it.
Just
download that app. And we'll honey code the hell out of this thing. In the end, it's a cool concept coming out of Amazon, AWS.
Inevitable kind of thing. Like I think as websites got really easy for anyone to build, phone apps were just the next thing to come.
But I guess the first real main topic for TechSide is something that I was really excited to see come about. We've talked a lot during this weird election year about Andrew Yang, and Steve and I are both kind of Yang gangers. Not in the sense that I was a full believer in everything Yang was saying, but I just liked him because honestly, he's the only person who has graced a political stage in the last 12 months who in any way gives a shit about the things that I care about. And one of the topics that he was talking about on the campaign trail, but now that he's no longer a nominee, but he is using his charity, Humanity First, to talk about and still drive forward things like UBI, whatever else. The one that he's released this week is the Data Dividend Project. And I find it a fascinating thing. I really hope that people sign up for it, that it actually gains some level of traction. And being a California resident, I'm in the middle of it here.
Yeah, no, I listened to him on his own podcast when he announced it. And it's It's sad that somebody outside of government actually has to do this, though. Like, you'd think this would be a branch of our government that would instill a program that looks out for consumers, given the fact that, as they state, data is one of the most valuable assets on the planet right now.
Yeah. And I guess to go back for a second, for listeners who don't know what the Data Driven Project is or what it's the whole purpose of it is it's the concept that there should be some level of data rights and data ownership, that we own the profits that are made off of our metadata, off of everything that is shared. So California has passed the law that allows California residents to opt in or opt out of whether companies can share our data, share our information to advertisers or whatever else it happens to be. And the Data Dividend Project is kind of trying to tie into that, in the sense that if we opt in to have them share it, that we own that data, we're giving them the permission to do it, and then we should gain some level of profitability off of however much they sell. So that's the basic concept, that we own our data, we own the privacy to the data, and if we forego our privacy, we own a piece of that profit. We should get paid back a dividend for that data being used for advertising or whatever else that happens to be.
Yeah, the stats they said on how valuable it is, I don't think people understand. I think it was 680 something billion a year companies profit from selling your data.
Well, I think he said that it was $686 or $687 billion is the current valuation of Facebook. So Facebook is worth three quarters of a trillion dollars, and it's a free platform. Like, there's no subscriptions. There's nothing to pay for. So how are they worth so much money? And it's because they've been scraping and farming our data.
I thought 687 was the value of data brokering. Or data sales, because they also went into the fact that out of the $687 billion, $200 billion a year is made from data brokers who you don't have any kind of tie to. So, like, you give Google your data to sell, but you at least get a Gmail and some kind of service. Same thing with Facebook, same thing with Twitter, Instagram. You're giving all these services your data, but at least you're getting something in return from them, some kind of service. $200 billion a year is made by data brokers who just barter and sell data from other companies to other companies. So there's a $200 billion industry from people that are taking your information and profiting from it, and they don't provide you, the consumer, anything, any benefit.
Yeah.
Like, that to me blew my mind. That's a huge sum of money for people that are literally doing, like, nothing. They're taking our ones and zeros and selling our ones and zeros. It's insane.
Yeah, and I think, in the end, I read some other articles regarding this Data Dividend Project, and, you know, a lot of people saying that it's not going to have any massive effect. It's not going to be a big payout. You know, you're talking about maybe a person who signs up for the Data Dividend Project getting a $20 bill.
Well, they said that currently, depending on your usage, but the average usage for a Facebook user is $10 a month. Like, Facebook should cut you a $10 a month check.
And in the end, I'm sure Facebook's going to find a way to, even if they have to pay this, they're going to find a way to still maintain their profitability. But I like the concept that it's just like anything else. The first iteration of it is probably not going to be a huge value. It's actually going to be some life-changing money you're going to get from Facebook or whatever else. But it just comes down to, if we start getting paid for our data, it solidifies that our data is our property. And that's really where I want to get to. I want to get more to a legislative piece where our data are the information that surrounds who we are and what we do on the internet that is unavoidable at this point in time belongs to us. And I think this is a big step towards that. And California has already taken that first initial step, at least forcing companies to have us opt in, opt out. Data Dividend Project is now taking that a step further. If you want to go and sign up for the Data Dividend, you can find the link over at our show notes at thenerdcantina.com/show87. And we'll have a link there to take you to the Data Dividend Project. And you can sign up. And essentially what you're doing is you're giving them almost a limited power of attorney to represent you. So that way, when they go sue Facebook and they go sue these companies, or they go negotiate at these companies, they can say, I've got 100,000 people that own their data rights. that are all going to opt out right now unless you say that you're going to pay them their $10 a month check. I think that's the direction that we need to go. The more people that sign up for something like this, especially in states like California, Arizona, states that are doing these opt-in programs, these data rights programs or legislation, those are going to be the ones that are going to have the negotiating power given to Data Dividend Project to actually hopefully gain us some rights.
Well, I've said it before, you know, every time you go somewhere with your cell phone and you're scrolling and talking to your friends and you're just dropping pennies out of your pocket for all these data companies to pick up. Like if you were walking around dropping change everywhere you walked, you would stop to pick it up. Like just because it's digital and you don't really think about it because it's not something physical that you can have. And, you know, I understand out of sight, out of mind, but we really need to get to a point where we know our own value and we leverage that for things that benefit us as a society, as a person. You know, these are companies that are profiting hundreds of billions of dollars from you and giving you nothing in the form of a check from their profit. But there are also companies that don't really pay shit in taxes either. Like, so they're literally raping you from both ends, DP style, and God. Just taking, like, giving you nothing in return for it. Like, it is just, it's obscene. It's really obscene. It really is.
So again, you can go ahead and find that link over our show notes, but or just Google Data Dividend Project. You can find it there. But in the end, I encourage people to sign up for it. If in my opinion, there is no real downside. There's no downside to this becoming the norm, that we own our data rights, that we gain some level of share in what happens to our data, because it'll, at a minimum, even if it makes you almost no money in your lifetime, at a minimum, it makes the companies that use our data be more transparent on what they're doing with it. If they actually have to survive audits, if they actually have to pay the resources, we become the resources of these companies. And if they have to pay us our dividends as part of their data resources, then they have to be transparent on who they're sharing it with, who they're selling it to, how much money they're making, how much they're using our data, and what they're using our data for. And that transparency is really where I want to be. Yeah, cool. I'll take an extra $20 a month. But in the end, I want it to be the norm that we know what's happening with our data. All right. We can jump off that topic for a moment here. if you can't tell that this is something I give a shit about. But we can move on. I guess we could just talk about another thing, that California is a step ahead.
That's a bold move.
And this one's a bold step ahead. Is California regulators, they've approved a new rule this week that is looking to make a big shift or big change to electric vehicles. And the guideline is going to be that in 2024, any medium duty vehicles, so we're talking about like from the Amazon vans, the commercial vans, to trucks, have to be electric in order to operate in California.
That's a short timeline. Like if you just told me 2030, I'd have been like, okay, seems legit. Sounds like a government plan. Give everyone a decade to kind of roll over. They said no. Like 2024, that's not even half a decade. And yeah, I don't think I've ever seen one electric van on the fucking road. You know what I'm saying? Like I see Teslas all the time, and there's electric cars and everything, but I don't think I've seen one motherfucking electric church van rolling around out there.
I mean, it's true. I guess it's just not that prevalent. So to think in 4 years, we're going to look at making this big shift, and I'm sure the initial shift is going to be that no new vehicles can be put into service. I'm sure they're going to grandfather old trucks. You can't expect companies to completely rework their entire fleet in a 4 year span. But they're looking to.
Can't even get all my customers to switch to LED light bulbs, bro. Are you fucking kidding me?
I know it's
wild. Do you
know
how hard it is for me to go into somebody's house and be like, "You still got incandescents in here?" Like, but they don't even sell these things anymore. Were you buying black market light bulbs off the dark web? Like, what the fuck? Just put some LEDs in. Save some energy. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
This is that weird challenge of this, mini country of California being able to make these changes? Because in the end, is it going to cost these companies a ton of money?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
California loves to throw its wang out all the time. Yeah. Just be like, look at it. Look at it, everybody. Just put on a big flex show, and then everybody's just like, all right, California.
Because nobody can afford to not do business in California. So they know that they've got capitalism by the balls, that in the end, while this decision is going to negatively impact the balance sheet for a couple of years for these companies, at the same point in time, they can't survive without California. They will figure this out.
Is like California's going to keep playing this game, and then next thing you know, Texas is going to say, hold my beer, and it's going to be like, we're passing regulations that you have to have a diesel truck that blows up black smoke 90% of the time, like and uses all the oil.
I said it is. I don't know. I think it's a step in the right direction. It's an aggressive step by the.
I mean, yeah, it never bothers you when it's like something you believe in personally, you know, right. And stuff like that. But that's what I mean. There's a lot of people with big hats and tall boots that don't believe in everything that, you know, we may personally believe in. And once they pull their wang out, that's a fight the rest of the country doesn't want to watch.
Well, we're looking at, I think it's 40% of all commercial vehicles by 2024 need to be zero emission vehicles. And then, you know, what you were talking about with that 10-year timeline, they're looking at a 15-year timeline before more than 50% of like medium duty pickup trucks and everything else sold in California need to be.
I feel like Amazon's that Muppet side eye meme right now. Like, they probably got like 400,000 medium sized vans, and they're just like, oh shit, god damn it.
That just means they're all gonna start driving their vans in from Arizona every day.
No, you're just going to see a flooded used car market with all these gray vans with these faded blue smiles that they can't fucking wash off.
Oh, I'll buy one of them. I'll turn it into that van life. I'll get better ready for that zombie apocalypse.
There's just going to be all these Amazon trucks driving around India now, all busted with the missing door. Yeah, kids in Africa, they get all our old NBA shirts that of the championship team that didn't win. It's just gonna be Africa's gonna be flooded with Amazon vans that nobody can do anything with.
But in the other, I think we'll move towards there. We got companies like Tesla and Nikola Motors all moving towards this direction.
Yeah, it was only a matter of time. I just like that 2024 gauntlet though is like something like wow.
Like I said, it's 40% of the fleet, but still they got to replace, you know, they're going to have to look at 40% of all vehicles sold or all commercial vehicles sold.
Well, now that they announced that, it's just if you are a business owner that needs, like, has delivery trucks, if you're a catering service, if you're, you know what I mean, like anything like that, you now think about whether, you know, if you're in the market for a new van, you buy that electric one now, because you know in a couple of years you're just going to be, your hand's going to get forced at some point. So even just setting that date, you have 4 years of people looking when they buy a new van or a new truck to that are going to say, you know what, I can't invest in something that the state is going to make obsolete in a matter of years.
Yeah. Well, I guess
we stay in California for the next story.
Yeah, I guess for the last story here, we can stay over here with California. I guess everything's linked to California.
Fucking California center of attention.
But this latest one, this latest story hits your home as well, and my alma mater. But the University of California was victim of a cyber attack recently, going back to March, and they've now confirmed that they paid out a little over $1 million in ransom following a cyber attack in their health department. So the University of California, specifically the San Francisco branch, there's a bunch of colleges in the UC system. UCSF was attacked, and the School of Medicine was affected. And they ended up paying this big ransom. I don't know how big it is. You know, these endowments and these colleges are massive. They have tons of money, but still $1 million paid to a cyber attack.
Yeah, it's so. I wonder, like, what determines the value, like, that they see in paying this? Like, what are they going to do with that data? Like, are they afraid of being sued by patients getting outed? And that would end up costing them tens of, if not hundreds of millions. So paying $1 million to stay out of a possible future lawsuit. Like, if somebody did leak your medical records, are they culpable because they got hacked? Like, I don't understand what determines the value of these things.
I never understand any of these cyber attack ransom things. You know, you hear about it on like the personal level, you know, where somebody hacks somebody's webcam or somebody, you know, finds pictures of, you know, their nudes or whatever else, and they threaten to release them. How do you pay that ransom? Like, how do you make an assumption that this shady person who just had you pay $1 million because of the information they gathered through a cyber crime, that they don't still release that information or use it against you in the future?
I guess no, I just don't understand the 1940s having the negatives. I gotta see you burn the negatives. Now it's just USBs.
I guess I just don't understand. But the reason why I said this ties back into, you know, your neck of the woods is the Champaign-Urbana, University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana campus was also affected. Their health department was also affected by this same ransomware. So this is something that is targeting the health data, specifically in the college environments. And UCSF has been trying to warn everybody, which is one of the reasons why they've come public with the fact that they paid this ransom, is to highlight and bring greater kind of knowledge that that these attacks are out there.
Yeah, man, I just don't know if knowing the HPV population of Champaign-Urbana is worth a fucking $1 million. Like,
the answer is all of them.
I just don't know that. Like, what kind of information do they have that justifies a seven-figure kind of number? I don't know. Like, and what can you do with that information?
It's true. I think if you're data
brokering, like we said in the other story, you're selling it to like health laboratories that want that health information so they can run it through their algorithms to find the next best antidepressive pill. You know, like what are you going to do with that? Like, so what? Jenny's got syphilis. Do something about it. Do something about it, man. Like, I don't know what you're doing.
I feel like the information they took was a little more personal and a little more negatively impacting. But, you know, just like as we were talking about, even there was a cybercrime specialist that was interviewed for this article that talked about how they just don't condone paying these ransoms ever because you never are 100% certain that you're going to get back that encryption key, that you're going to get back that data, and that by paying this ransom, UCSF has just made themselves a target. Yeah, they just made themselves a target. Like, you better be spending way more than $1 million on that security firm that's going to come in and make sure that you are not a victim again.
And that's what I'm saying. They're just going to find one of these data broker firms and do some black market USB under the table deal and give it to some company like Pfizer who just wants all of the data to make, some new fucking boner pill.
it's a weird world we live in. I still don't know what information they got, and that's the one thing that you're taking big leaps as far as assuming what the information is.
They say health data, so what else? Yeah. Like you gonna out a breast cancer patient? Is that gonna be a big deal? No, you know what I mean. Like the only thing I could see of like doing with health data that someone would wanna pay a ransom for that would stop them from having like liability in a lawsuit is like, if they just out every positive HIV test and then like everybody on that list gets to sue the fucking school because they didn't protect their data and now everybody knows I got genital warts. that's the only thing that makes sense to me. It's the only thing that makes logical fucking sense to me. Don't pay it. Don't pay it.
I think I'm going to start an out of context segment for our show And I'm going to just clip out that little part where you just said that everybody in the world now knows I have genital warts.
Yep.
I'm just going to I'm just gonna leave that 100% out of context as a as a promo for the show from this point on.
God damn it. Really teed that one up. Son of a bitch. I never try to give my enemies a chance to really get a zinger on me, and now perpetually for the rest of my life.
There you go.
They got the sound bite.
But in the end, yeah, the moral of the story is a bunch of cyber criminals have $1.1 million worth of seed money to attack more people.
Yeah, so sign up with the Data Dividend Project so when they sell it to a broker, you at least get a piece of it. Oh, God. Right, fucking 2020, man.
It's definitely been an interesting one. And
it's fucking June, man. Well, this show will actually air in July. It'll be July 1st, the day this releases. Yeah. So it's July, bro.
Yeah, we got plenty of time to right the ship, right? That's it's all going to go downhill from here or uphill. I don't know. Which way do we want it to go at this point?
I'd take a nice coast down the straightaway right now. I don't want any hills.
All right. Well, with all that said, I think that's a week in news that we've got for you. And thanks again, as always, for listening. Hopefully you picked up a tip or two. Join over at the Data Dividend Project. Make sure you do so. And like and subscribe. Any support that you can provide the show in the realm of getting us more exposure to individuals. So that means subscribing, giving us ratings, reviews on iTunes. And it just communicates to people that what we're doing here is providing you some level of value and encourages others to take a listen.
Everyone on Twitter is always looking for a new podcast. It's like the most common tweet I see. Any podcast recommendations? At me, bro. fucking at me. At the Nerd Cantina. Send that shiz.
All right. Well, thanks again for listening to episode 87. Talk to you next week, nerds.
See ya.